والصلاة والسلام على رسول الكريم وعلى آله وصحبه ومن استنى بسنة إلى يوم الدين. All praise due to Allah and may Allah's peace and blessings be on His last Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam and on all those who follow the path of righteousness until the last day. As the brother said, the topic of this evening's presentation is that of Islam and science. And this topic is of particular relevance to us when we consider historically the relationship between science and religion. Science is generally presented as being a system which deals with facts, realities, whereas religion is presented as a system dealing with ideas and faith in these ideas. However, if we're to look at science in depth to really understand what science is, and we are to look at religion as understood in Islam, we will actually conclude that there is no contradiction or there are no discrepancies between Islam and science. This is basically what I will try to develop and present to you this evening. Now, the word science itself comes from a Latin word, scientia, which means knowledge. And science has been defined as the sum of human knowledge of the universe. It is claimed that it deals with facts and with the relations between these facts. Furthermore, scientists, according to those who define science in this fashion, are guided by a general philosophy. There are certain assumptions which underlie all scientific investigation. One, that natural phenomena can be understood by asking the right questions and by doing appropriate experiments. Two, there is in general a link between cause and effect. Three, nature is consistent in time and space, and experiments repeated under identical conditions should give the same results. And the people who gave this definition, this is from Encyclopedia, stated at the end of that, without these assumptions, science would find it impossible to discover patterns and predict outcomes. So, what we have here, when we look at this definition of science, though it says it's dealing with facts and the relations between these facts, we see that there is a philosophy behind it. It is not something which is just tangible that you can touch, put your finger on every single part of it. No, there is a philosophy, there is a concept, an idea which is behind it. Among those the ideas is that natural phenomena can be understood by asking the right questions. In other words, it is possible for the human beings to understand everything. This is what it's implying. It is possible. There is nothing in this world which the human mind cannot understand, which is from what they call natural phenomena. Your brain, how it works. Your cells, how they work. The rain, why it falls, etc. We, in Islam believe that there are laws behind all these things. However, we don't believe that we can understand everything. There will be limits to our ability to understand. However, science, as it is understood today, is based on the premise that it is possible to understand everything. Everything of natural phenomena. Everything connected with nature. How the universe was created. This is what they're asking about, right? The Big Bang, they're tracking different aspects of the stars and the dust between the stars, etc., trying to find this. And they tell you very clearly what they're looking for. The beginning of the universe. They feel if they ask the right questions, conduct the right experiments, they will eventually be able to discover how the universe came into being. And they're spending some billions of dollars to build a machine. It's got a big long name, some cyclo something or the other, you know, which runs for like miles in its circumference, where they will accelerate certain particles which make up matter and cause them to collide to try to reproduce. In the experiments, as they said, they believe everything is consistent. That if you are able to do something experimentally now, you can assume that that is what happened in the first place. So they're going to collide these particles to try to find out what is in the essence of matter. I mean, what is matter made of? See, they do not believe that there are any limits to man's understanding. And towards that end, they will spend, and they're prepared to spend, billions of dollars to discover these supposed realities, while many people around the earth are starving. This is something very, very important. Maybe some kind of paper or something can be put there so that the door doesn't keep banging each time. Priority is given to this. Science has taken on a certain position in the minds of what we now, what we could call Western civilization. It's taken on a certain position where it becomes more important than human life. Huge amounts of money will be spent to research, to find these, very philosophical, very fine points, while people are starving, while people are living in the streets, in the same technological societies which have, at their hands huge amounts of wealth. They will have the extremely poor there who will live and die in the streets. And yet at the same time they will spend these monies on such experiments. Because there's a philosophy here. See, for people to do that, it must be, this is very important. There's something very, very important to them. The idea of the origin of things. Because the position of God within the system, has been sort of shifted to the side now. Man has to have an explanation. Why people believe in God, belief in God has to do with, an understanding of one's position on this earth. Why you're here, and gives you some kind of guidance and direction. So now, if you have put that aspect aside, revelation and what revelation brought, now you have to fill that gap. You have to substitute something else for it. And this is what so-called modern science is bent on doing, to be able to explain the beginning of things, why we're here, where we're headed, all these questions. They're seeking to understand these philosophical questions. And when you look into the history of science, and according to Western philosophy, science began with the Greeks. The Greeks were in contact with Egyptians and Babylonians, and brought together what experimental facts they had gathered and explained in a particular way, and they developed what we, or what Western society has referred to as being the beginnings of science. However, if you look at the goal of philosophy, in the first period, which is known as the pre-Socratic period, that is between the 7th and the 5th century BC, in Greek, the history of Greek philosophy, if you look at their goal in that first period, we see that it was to discover the basic elements of the universe. See the circle? This was philosophy then. This was the beginning of Greek philosophy. Their goal was to discover the basic elements of the universe. Modern science today, as we just talked about, their goal is to find out those elements of the universe. Smashing the atoms, etc. To try to find out what is everything built on. Then it was called philosophy. So we can see actually that the understanding of philosophy and science is something which is very, you know, very shady. When you actually go, you know, if you take, leave the general presentations given in the science books, you know, for students, if you leave that general explanation, like as I gave you initially of what science was, then you go into the in-depth studies, like the philosophy of science, etc., and you see what these people say, you start to find that science is something which is, it is virtually philosophy. It is something which is half philosophy, half facts. It is not so clear. It's not so clear-cut that you can say it's just dealing with facts. In fact, what you find is that in that period, that early period, there was no distinction made between science and philosophy. Later, science came to be regarded as a component of philosophy. This is like during the period of Plato, Aristotle, etc. And finally, it became referred to as a set of disciplines which were separate from philosophy. So it went through different stages. However, in the early stage when it was in fact philosophy, that's how the people looked at it, as philosophy, for what it was. However, as a justification for man's existence in a way which would build confidence in people, it is presented as being factual today. It's dealing with the facts. So you can be sure about it because it's something which is tangible. However, we said when we really look into what they're doing, we see that really there is philosophy involved here. In any case, what we found during the time of Plato, which was around the 4th century BC, and he was a student of Socrates, he held at that time that it was more noble and dignified to seek answers by reasoning than by experiment. What this means? It means that he felt that the human mind, through reflection, this is science, the period of science, though, through reflection on nature, etc., will be able to understand the workings of nature. And it was better to understand it through that way than to go and do simple experiments. So what you found is that they concluded in that period that if you drop a heavy ball and a light ball, the heavy ball will hit the ground before the light ball because it was heavier than the light ball. That's reasoning. And nobody ever tried it. From that time, in the 4th century BC, all the way until the Middle Ages, it wasn't until, you know, the beginning of what is known as the Renaissance, in the 15th century CE,
after the time of Christ, this is when this experiment was actually challenged. The experiment was actually done, and it was shown that, in fact, if you drop a heavy ball and a light ball, both of them will hit the ground at the same time. So we see the essence, the basis of Western science being there in philosophy. And these ideas were adopted by the Roman Catholic Church. And they used it to form or to support their worldview. And what happened is that as scientists increased their knowledge, they found that some of these earlier views were no longer actually factual, but they were based on these reasons and they were not based on experiments, and they started to challenge these. The church, which had accepted these as being truth, now felt itself challenged. So they set up what is known as Inquisition courts, wherein people who proposed any ideas, scientific ideas, which contradicted those ones which had been accepted by the church, which were the Platonian, Aristotelian ideas, anyone who proposed any ideas which contradicted these were considered to be a heretic. And you had, for example, Copernicus, this is all the way now into the 15th century, who finished a sun-centered theory. In other words, actually from Plato's time, they held that the earth was the center of the universe. Everything was moving around the earth. So Copernicus, in the 15th century, proposed the idea that the sun was the center of the universe. But he wrote a paper on this, a book, in 1529, but he didn't publish it until 1543, just before he died, for fear that the church would take him to task, you know, and create a lot of problems. One of his, or the people who were living in his period of time, actually was killed a little later, but was born in his same period. His name was Giordano Bruno. He was executed for heresy in 1600 because he stated that the universe was infinite and the earth only a small body. He was executed. And Galileo, who is sort of looked at as being the father of modern astronomy, he himself supported the Copernican theory and was taken before Inquisition courts. During these courts, the trial, the Copernican theory was declared to be heretical, and Galileo was told to stop preaching it. Don't support it anymore. However, Galileo, you know, some years later, went ahead, about 28 years later, went ahead and published a work on it anyway. At that time, he was again called up. He was tried and convicted of teaching false doctrines, even though he had, you know, developed this telescope. Actually, it was developed in Holland, and he took the telescope and, you know, increased the power of the telescope, was able to look at the moon and the sun and so on and so on. And he had done experiments to show and to support the Copernican theory. However, these were rejected, and he was convicted of teaching false doctrines and compelled to renounce the Copernican theory publicly, and he was imprisoned, which was later, you know, changed to just house arrest. But he spent the rest of his days under house arrest. This is what happened to the scientists of Europe. As they developed their scientific theories, which were based on more and more on experiments, and what this led to, because there was a revolt amongst scientists, as well as a revolt developing in this period of time amongst church people. This was a period when Martin Luther also came to Rome and found the Pope looking like a king. You know, he had a crown which was so heavy, he couldn't put it on his head. They had these wires from the ceiling which would hold the crown above his head. You know, he had robes of gold, and you know, as Martin Luther, he came there seeking spiritual inspiration. And he came across the Pope, he was shocked. He went back and, you know, wrote some papers against the Roman Catholic system, and he began what is known as the Protestant movement. So they protested against the excesses which the Roman Catholicism had developed. They tried to go back to the pure teachings or the early teachings of Christianity. So they were involved in rebelling on a religious level, and at the same time the scientists were rebelling, you know, on a, you could say, philosophical level. What happened with this is that the scientists, many of them or a number of them, went all the way out to actually denying the existence of God, rejecting religion, because religion had taken a position which had now been shown to be wrong. And when you go back into the Old Testament, you look at the description of the creation of the world. It's totally against what can be shown scientifically and logically. You know, talking about light before the sun was created. You know, let there be light, light before, you know, sun, water before, when it's known in the formation of the planets that it was in a gaseous state before it hardened, before water came, as water talked about before. You know, so what you find is that the descriptions in the Bible actually of the creation are unscientific. And the beliefs that were held by the scientists, you know, were constantly coming in conflict with those held by the church. So you found people looking for some other alternatives. Another way of explaining man's existence. And out of that came the Darwinian theory, which was now up into the 1900s, late 1800s, 1900s, where an explanation of how man came about without having to resort to the idea of creation was put forth as a substitute. Man evolved from the apes. And, of course, this went through a period of struggle with the church, but eventually, much of the church, Western church, it submitted. They had certain debates which took place in the United States and in England, and those who supported the positions of the church were defeated in these debates. And as such, the idea of evolution became widespread. So now, when we talk about religion and science, in a Western sense, this is an expression of conflict. The church, what it represented, was opposed to what science represented. However, when we look from an Islamic perspective, because Islam recognizes the place of human mind, reasoning, understanding what exists around him. At the same time, it identifies revelation as another channel for understanding what is beyond nature, let's say, the supernatural. These two are not in conflict with each other, because what man discovers of the factual laws of nature, these we recognize as being the laws of God. Even the term the laws of nature, this was a term used to substitute for the laws of God. Because when you think of the laws of nature, you're thinking of something which is a blind force, nature. Something which is not a being that you would have to be responsible to question what does nature want from us. No, nature is a blind force. But when you say God, then you have to, there's got to be something, this is an intelligent force, therefore there is purpose, there is reason. Whereas nature, this is just accidental combination of natural forces or matter. So, Islam, it looks at science, what is factual, as being perfectly valid. And what we find historically is that after the Greeks had developed what may be called science to a certain point, and the Romans became the rulers of the region, Romans were not particularly concerned with science, philosophy. They were more concerned with administration, rule. So you find science went on a decline. There were a few of that time, you know, who were scientists who did produce some things, but they were nothing like in comparison to the time of the Greeks. And then after the time of the Romans, with the fall of the Roman Empire, you find the whole of Europe falling into a state of what they call the Dark Ages. Dark Ages, the ages of ignorance, where the church now had a stranglehold on the masses of the people. Minds were crushed. Nobody could question or argue or discuss or anything like this. During this period known as the Dark Ages and the early Middle Ages, we find this is a time when Islam came, 7th, 8th century, developed centers of learning in Baghdad and in Spain. We had the Caliph al-Ma'mun. He had set up what was known as Bayt al-Hikmah, or the House of Wisdom, in which he had a library and an observatory connected to it. People were paid to translate the Greek works, works which were also written in Syriac, in Persian, in Sanskrit. They were being translated into Arabic, and this knowledge which was there was then utilized for the development of the sciences, the various fields of medicine, geography, etc., amongst the Muslims. Scholars at that time were rounded. They were religious, and at the same time they had knowledge in the various areas, the various sciences. There were some who went beyond the bounds themselves, in that their concept of the religion itself was distorted. Some of the big names that are normally quoted as the major, you know, Muslim scientists, like, you know, Ibn Sina and others, these guys were in fact mostly from amongst the Shiites, you know, in certain extreme branches like the Ismailis, who held views which were against mainstream Islam. They did not submit to the commandments of Islam, in the sense that the Ismailis, generally speaking, look at existence and religion as being symbolic, you know, interpretable. It's possible to interpret it. So through their interpretations, they interpreted away the various commandments of Islam, as well as the responsibilities that were outlined even in the Quran itself. Quran became just a set of symbols, and life and existence also became a set of symbols. So we find amongst those who held such beliefs that they deviated from mainstream, what we know as mainstream Islam. However, in the mainstream, science was respected. The Islamic State supported the development of the sciences, because this was the Bayt al-Hikmah. This was paid for from the public treasury. So the Islamic system supported science, as long as it stayed within the bounds of the material world
and did not seek to enter into a region which was the bounds of God, which has to do with the supernatural. That of the supernatural, what is behind what we can see, touch, and feel, that we have to trust in revelation, sciences of revelation, sciences of religion. Because this also, because we said science means ultimately knowledge. So what we have is two bodies. We have a body of what we could call human knowledge, and we have a body of what we could call divine knowledge. That which has been revealed by God is according to the traditional definition of science, also science, as well as that which man has discovered through his experimentation, etc. And in fact, you know, what has been known as the scientific method, supposedly developed by, you know, Roger Bacon, this, actually what we find, was a result of the contact between the British and the French with Muslim scientists in Spain. And much of the ideas which they developed were already in practice there. Although Europe, in presenting Francis Bacon, Roger Bacon, etc., and their contributions to the so-called scientific method, they usually don't even mention Spain and the contributions of Spain in the books, you know, Arabic, which were translated into Latin, etc. In fact, it was the Islamic centers of learning which provided the basis for what was later became known as the Renaissance in Europe, the development in religion as well as in the sciences. Now, having said that, Islam supports science. It supports that which is fact. As to the theories of science, now, we enter into an area of philosophy, and this is where the challenges can come. The theory of evolution, which is looked at as being a fact today, is in fact a theory. And what it proposes is in conflict with what Islam teaches about the origin of man and the creation. In the Quran, there are many references, which I'm sure you're familiar with. There's a book written by Maurice Boucaï called The Bible, Quran, and Science, in which he has listed many of the verses in the Quran which point to what is now known as the common scientific theory or facts, which are in existence now, believe them now, from embryology to astronomy, to geology, etc. These can be found in the Quran. However, the Quran is not looked at as being a science book. Allah has put certain references in there as signs for those who reflect that this book is not the product of Muhammad, of a man. This is a book which was from God. Because there are things in that book which the Prophet Muhammad could not have understood. Some people will say, well, you know, Aristotle, Plato, they predicted certain things, which turned out to be true later on. So really, the Prophet Muhammad was a good predictor. You know, he predicted certain things which came true. However, when you actually go and look at what Plato and Aristotle were saying, true, they did predict certain things concerning nature, which we have found out thousands of years later. But at the same time, both of these and other thinkers of their time also made some colossal blunders. They made some statements which were just totally out to lunch. So they had a few points which turned out to be fantastic, great, true, but they had many points which were incorrect. Whereas when we look at the Quran, and we look at the various points that are mentioned there, we find them consistently correct. They agree with what is known in terms of scientific fact today. Consistent. So this is not the workings of a man predicting, because the workings of a man predicting will not be 100%. He will have some right and much wrong. As a norm. True, there are some things mentioned in the Quran, which, say, modern science, there are theories out there, but it is something which may not be provable at this point in time. You know, for example, Allah mentions that everything, from everything which he created it in pairs. And, according to biologists, we have certain animals like the amoeba, which just one, divides into two pieces, so there are no pairs. You don't have a male and female amoeba, as far as is known. But that's the point, as far as is known. It doesn't mean that some time from now, 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, it may be found, because it's a question of observation, that, in fact, the amoeba also exists in pairs. So, what happens is that there may be some points, and there's a few, which science at this point in time, you know, due to its limited level of information, may question. However, the vast majority of what is in the Quran has been is quite in accordance with what we know today as being scientific fact. And Allah has set these various things in the Quran, as I said, as a sign to the people in the various centuries to come. Because people in the time of Prophet Muhammad, they were able to witness him and witness miracles which he did and witness his lifestyle, the way he treated people, etc., and be convinced. However, in our time, we do not have the Prophet Muhammad amongst us. What we have is the Quran and the Sunnah. And this now provides for us the understanding or the conviction that in fact Muhammad was a prophet of Allah. Because the Quran will remain until the last day as a proof and as a way of life for mankind, so that mankind is responsible, which will be protected by Allah as He has promised. And there will be in the Quran, not only on a historical basis, but on every level in man's development, signs which will show him that this Quran is definitely from Allah. However, as we have certain theories amongst the scientists, like that of evolution, which, though it is accepted by the general masses as being fact, the Quran and the teachings of Islam rejects it. And actually, when you go and look at the position of the leading scholars today, they do admit that evolution as it was understood in the time of Darwin and following Darwin, what they call the neo, you know, Darwinian theories, is not in fact true. Because what Darwinism proposes is that ultimately life began from chemicals which accidentally came together forming special precursor molecules, and from that the early cells developed and the cells, you know, evolved into life forms, and the life forms gradually evolved into higher and more complex life forms as time went on, until eventually you ended up with man, the peak of evolution. However, this theory as it is presented, when you go to look at the fossil record, you find that it is not supported by the fossil record. What you find here in the fossil record is that there are various creatures appearing on the fossil record, very complex, with no precursors, no one before them that were less complex to evolve into these. So really what the fossil record supports is what we call special creation, that these were created by God. Sure, Islam scientifically recognizes development. We breed dogs and produce dogs capable of doing certain things. Horses, animals, we see development taking place.
a species of dog which may not be fast running. We can breed with some other species which is, has some qualities of fast running and produce a species which is fast running. You see this? But this is development. No matter how we develop this dog, we work with him, we breed him with other animals, he doesn't become anything but a dog. You don't find him all of a sudden becoming a small horse. He's staying a dog all the time. So, the process of development within species we recognize. But one species becoming another species, that we don't recognize. These various species were created by God. On the other hand, we find some scholars who have made statements which have proven to be scientifically false. We had a major scholar here who held some years ago, 20 odd years ago, that the earth was flat. And he brought evidence from the Quran which seemed to imply that the earth was flat. However, this is what we call ijtihad, or a reasoned conclusion made by an individual from Quranic text or text from the Hadith, which may be right or may be wrong. We're not obliged to accept that as being a fact. If evidence, if the factual evidence proves otherwise, then we don't have to accept it. So, one cannot hold up this individual's ruling as being an evidence that Islam is contradictory to science. Because when sufficient facts were brought to this individual, he gave up the ruling. And he now holds that the earth is round. So, we can see here, though he was a religious scholar of, you know, great repute, etc., the fact that he held this position, when he got enough evidence, he changed it. So he is not here fighting against science. I mean, he is seeking the truth to the best ability that he could. He didn't have much scientific background. He grew up in religious schools, etc., etc., and he drew his conclusions just based on what the evidence appeared as it could possibly be interpreted in the Quran, etc. So, if we find other instances of this, and this is why also many scholars discourage us from taking the Quran as a scientific textbook and trying to find scientific theories in all the verses of the Quran, because you know, you run into problems. You find people starting to make interpretation of the verses, twisting them to try to fit some kind of theory that exists now, and 10 years from now that theory may be thrown out. So we are not encouraged to do this when certain factual pieces of information come up. If we find something in the Quran which seems to confirm that, definitely we can say, oh, it was there. But now to take the Quranic verses and just try to match it up with all the existing theories, no. Man discovers something which exists. He is not creating. He is only discovering. So what he discovers, which is in fact real, this is from Allah. And revelation naturally should not be in conflict with it, because it is also from Allah. So, with that, we could sum up the essence of this presentation, and that Islam, being a way of life which has been revealed by God, and not a product of human philosophizing, reasoning, which is, when we look at the other religions around the world, this is what it is in fact.
it will naturally not contradict what is scientifically sound. However, those other systems, because of the fact that they're the product of human reasoning, not necessarily based in fact, when the facts come out, we'll find them in contradiction to the other religions, these other systems. And that's the reality. When we look at Christianity, is Christianity what was brought by Prophet Jesus, alayhi salam? Of course not. The early Christians, they are referred to as the Judeo-Christians. They continued to practice the ways, the Jewish practices of ablution before prayer, praying at set times of the day, circumcising themselves, not drinking blood, not eating pork, you know, all these things they continued to practice. And this is not really until the Roman Empire, the leader Constantine, adopts Christianity that that philosophical Trinitarian concept of Jesus and the evolution of the teachings into cultural practices and norms which existed in Greece and Rome, blending these all together. It was not until that time that this system, new system which evolved, was now pushed on the rest of the world, the Christian world. Much of it in the East, in Alexandria, Syria, etc., they held that God was one and that Jesus was a prophet of God who was created. It's not until that period of time, which is known as the 4th century, that these ideas now were pushed onto the rest of Christianity. Trinitarian concepts became foremost, and we find the whole of Christianity taking this turn based on human reasoning, gathering, you know, adaptations, adding customs here and there, and ideas to support from Greek philosophy, etc., that naturally is going to run afoul with reality. That which has been found by scientists, those who have, you know, gathered certain facts and showed these relationships between these facts, have shown that the much of the philosophy of Christianity is opposed to scientific facts. Because it is not revealed from by Allah, it is a product of man, it is going to be in conflict with what is revealed by Allah. The laws of nature, so-called laws of nature, these were and are a product of God. And they will be in conflict with the minds of men, what man puts together for himself. Whereas Islam, which is a way of life, and not merely a philosophy built up over a period of time, based on revelation from Allah, from God, would naturally be consistent with what may be termed today as science. And so, we can conclude that Islam is not opposed to scientific fact, though it may oppose some of the fiction, which is known as theory. At the same time, it is important for us, when we look at science, to understand that there is an aspect of it that is truly science. And there's another aspect of it, which is philosophy, which is an idea seeking to explain man's existence in another way without having to deal with God. And wherever this appears, we have to stand our ground. For example, we have what is known as the Einstein's theory of relativity, E equals MC squared, energy equals mass times the square of the speed of light. Translated into normal terms, they're saying energy can neither be created nor destroyed. Or mass can neither be created nor destroyed. It's just mass evolves into energy, energy goes into mass. It's just a back and forth. And the basis of this, they split the atom and everything else. However, we as Muslims do not accept that theory as it stands. Because it is in contradiction to our concept of God. Because everything which exists, which is not God, was created. And it will be destroyed. So matter and energy were created, and they will be destroyed. We can say, matter evolved into energy, energy can evolve into matter, as in relationship to man, in that man cannot produce energy. He cannot create matter. This is something which exists, which evolves back and forth. Man cannot, but God can. So, whatever we have of science, we have to keep it in relationship to the science that we've received of revelation, wherein we understand who God is, and we understand man's limitations, and we have to look at science within these bounds. That basically is the sum of this brief presentation. Actually, the topic, you know, could be gone into in much more detail. Unfortunately, I didn't have no time to really get into certain other aspects of it. But if you'd like to ask some questions now, you know, concerning Islam and science, you are perfectly welcome.
According to some people, do we believe that there's life on other planets?
Life on other planets, Islam does not deny the possibility. So, I mean, if a Muslim stands up and dogmatically says, there is no life on other planets, he is speaking without authority, really. He is speaking from his assumptions. He is just making certain assumptions. So we cannot deny it, ultimately. We will not say there is, either. Because we don't have evidence for that either. I mean, there are certain verses which may be interpreted. However, this is human interpretation. And when you try to apply it to reality, it may be wrong. So this is the position that a thinking Muslim will take is we don't know. Allah knows. If we find life, alhamdulillah. It's the greatness of Allah. If we don't find any life, alhamdulillah. It's also the greatness of Allah. It is not an issue for us. Of course, modern science is bent on finding that life. Because they don't believe, this was an accident. So this accidentally happened, and it should be able to accidentally happen someplace else too. So we got to find it. But for them, it is, you know, it is key for supporting their own philosophy. That all this came about by accident. But for us, it's not important. We would not spend billions of dollars researching, you know, with these these telescopes, trying listening in on the heavens, trying to hear some, you know, alien from, you know, Alpha, Omega, you know, sending messages. We don't spend time wasting on that stuff because it's not relevant to us here. What is relevant to us here is to utilize the resources which Allah has given us for the benefit of man. You see, knowledge for us is to be utilized for man's benefit. And we are utilitarian in our approach to knowledge. We don't believe in this knowledge for the sake of knowledge. We don't believe in it. Knowledge is useful in as much as it is applicable. It means something. It affects our lives. As for just knowledge to sit and contemplate, you know, meditate on it. No, this is not, this Islam doesn't promote this or support this.
Is there an understanding to believe that the conquest of the other planets is quite possible that humans could learn it again?
No, it's not un-Islamic to believe that. Yes, I mean, there are verses, you know, which point in that direction, that it may be interpreted in that light. But whether it is interpreted in that light or not, factually, we have some people going to the moon. Of course, you know, you have Muslims who took this thing, well, you know, they interpreted the verse in another way, which didn't imply this, and as far as they're concerned, man cannot leave the planet, and, you know, what the Americans and the Russians did is just, you know, they can make movies. They make these movies, and, you know, you will swear this is real. So it could all have been just a big hoax. Yeah. There are people who have that position. Yeah. Well, let's I don't believe it's a hoax.
Yeah.
Myself, personally. Because, you know, having gone through, you know, scientific studies myself, you know, my major was, you know, biochemistry in university. And, you know, I've done basic experiments with rockets and things like this. I mean, it is not beyond, it is not inconceivable that, you know, man could, you know, go beyond this point. So to me, it's something that the likelihood of the whole planet, you know, conspiring, the Russians and the Americans, to create this hoax on the rest of the world, I find it quite small, especially, you know, since we have had a Muslim also, you know, gone up and, you know, fly around the earth also, you know. I would say that this is, you know, as people who have taken positions which are in fact against, you know, the Islamic approach, which is that knowledge is only in a particular area. When Allah and Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam said, you know, seeking knowledge is compulsory on every human, you know, on every Muslim, that this was referring only to religious knowledge. You know, that is all that we can judge or understand anything by. No. Allah, when He created Adam, He taught him the names of all things. I mean, if it were only religious knowledge that was important, why teach him the names of the other things? That naming process of classification involves understanding, you know, etc. I mean, it would not be necessary. So we believe that Allah has given us the ability to utilize, as He said, He created the creation for our use, for man, and that there is knowledge there that he can gain from understanding the function of Allah's creation. But as Allah says, وَمَا أُوتِيتُم مِنَ الْعِلْمِ إِلَّا قَلِيلًا, we've only given you a small amount of knowledge. We're not going to understand everything. And as a Muslim, we would not waste billions of dollars trying to understand the elements from which the universe was made, determining the time when the Big Bang first took place. This is irrelevant to us. It's a wastage of human resources, time, money. So the Islamic approach is much more human-oriented, concerned with man. Whereas the Western so-called scientific approach is philosophical. It is concerned more with man's justification for his injustices to his fellow man, ultimately. Because when you take God out of the picture, what you have is what is known as survival of the fittest, the law of the jungle.